Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters. This is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Gigi Sohn, who's the co-founder and president of Public Knowledge, a Washington, D.C.-based public interest group working to defend citizens' rights in the emerging digital culture. She serves as a project specialist in the Ford Foundation's Media, Arts, and Culture Unit and as an executive director of the Media Access Project. She is also the recipient of the Electronic Frontier Foundation's Internet Pioneer Award. Welcome to Background Briefing, Gigi Sohn.
Great to be here, Ian.
And the House has taken up this so-called SOPA bill. So tell me where this stands now. I mean, there's a great deal of very powerful internet companies that seem to be arrayed against it. Google and Facebook, AOL, Twitter, and eBay. They want to stop this Stop Online Piracy Act. And on the other side, I take it, there's an equal array of heavy hitters. Is that the order of battle?
Well, no, it isn't, Ian, because there are now dozens of human rights groups, public interest organizations, First Amendment organizations, civil liberties organizations, consumer groups, and hundreds of thousands of individual Americans who have allied themselves against what we call SOPA. So, you know, unfortunately, the press, and not just the mainstream press, but also the trade press, is portraying this as a battle between the Hollywood titans and the Silicon Valley titans. And it's really, really much more than that. It's taken a little while for the sort of the anti-SOPA fervor to take hold, but now it's taking hold with great ferocity, because I think ordinary internet users are seeing how this bill would really, you know, restructure and reorder the internet and change the internet that we've, you know, come to know and love. In addition, it would actually provide immunity for internet service providers like Comcast and Verizon, AT&T, who violate net neutrality by blocking websites. So there's a lot not to like about this bill, but it is not just the clash of the titans.
So it's being carried by the Judiciary Committee Chairman Lamar Smith of Texas. What kind of bipartisan support does it have?
It has bipartisan support, and that's unfortunate, and that's partly because Hollywood spreads its money around, but it's also partly because, you know, these folks in Congress don't know anything about how the internet actually operates. What was really striking about the hearing today was not only were there no internet activists at all, any kind of nonprofit or First Amendment or human rights advocates at all on the panel, but there were no internet engineers. And one of our biggest arguments against this bill is that it will destabilize the internet. It will make cybersecurity more difficult to take hold, that it really restructures and reorders the internet ecosystem in a way that's quite dangerous. But these members don't have that kind of expertise. They don't have internet engineers on their staffs, but they also did not invite one to speak to them that could actually talk about this is what will happen to the efficient and effective operation of the internet if you pass this bill.
So is there an element of, already those that are arrayed against SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, they are talking about censorship. On the other side, is there a kind of moralistic argument going on here about pornography and spam?
Well, this is typical of debates over copyrights. Is, you know, Hollywood says, well, you know, theft is theft, and therefore we have to do whatever we can to stop theft. So to them, it's a very black and white argument, is that, you know, this is stealing, so therefore you need to stop it, and it doesn't matter how you stop it. We should just pull out, you know, all the guns and stop it immediately. The other argument they make is, well, they look at Google. Google is the bad guy only in Washington. Everybody else around the country loves them, but Washington, for some odd reason, hates them. Said, well, Google, you know, you block websites that have child pornography on them. Why can't you block copyright infringing material? And the answer is, it's a lot easier to tell child pornography than it is to tell whether something is infringing on copyrights. It's not a black and white area. It's a very gray area. But that answer never really suffices. And like I said, the studios now for years have made this, you know, a moralistic issue. You know, either you're a thief or not, and if you're not for us, you're for the thieves, you're for the pirates.
And of course, does this in any way address where the real piracy takes place, places like China?
Well, it's going to try to, but it's not going to work in any way. And that's I think that's another important point, is that, you know, while this bill will impose untold burdens not only on big guys like Google, but on small entrepreneurs and small websites by making them police their networks and their sites for copyright infringement, it actually won't do a darn thing to stop the piracy. Because what this does is it requires these internet intermediaries to block access to certain websites, to block their domain names, but people can easily work around that. They can easily type in an IP address and get to the same pirated content that's being blocked by one of the intermediaries. So not only is this bill blunderbuss, it's going to be absolutely ineffective. And what will happen then? What will happen then is that the content industry will come back to Congress and say, oh, that didn't work, now we need some other crazy idea. Now, I've been doing this now for 10 years, and, you know, every couple years, the studios and the record companies come up with some new cockamamie idea for how to hobble technology, even though technology always, in the end, helps them. And one of the first bills that I testified on would have allowed copyright holders to send viruses into people's computers in order to protect their copyright. And since then, there have been a gazillion other crazy ideas, which I won't talk about. But how about harnessing the technology, which is so powerful, which lowers costs for you, to actually build a legitimate market? They don't want to talk about that.
But isn't that what Apple has done with iTunes?
Yeah, well, isn't it ironic that a hardware manufacturer was the one that figured out how to sell songs? And Netflix, which is not a movie studio, has figured out, you know, how to make movies available to people in a way that they will pay for. I think that's no accident, A, because the technologists tend to go to those kind of innovative companies and not to the studios and record companies, and B, because the studios and record companies would rather try to preserve their outdated business models and the control they have over content than to figure out new cool ways to harness the technology. People forget that 25 years ago, the movie industry tried to put the VCR out of business, and they almost did. By one vote in the Supreme Court, they almost were successful. And it landed up making them far more money than they make in the theaters. The Internet has the same potential to make them far more money than they make in the theaters, yet they're trying to control it, they're trying to, you know, strap it down, and they're trying to destroy it.
Again, I'm speaking with Gigi Sohn, who's the co-founder and president of Public Knowledge, a Washington, D.C.-based public interest group, and we're talking about the Congress taking up the Stop Online Piracy Act, otherwise known as SOPA. And it does feel like the studios and the record companies, Gigi Sohn, are fighting the last war. If 70% of all 18 to 29-year-olds have pirated music and TV shows and movies, I mean, this is a generational thing. I mean, my daughter's generation, they listen to music, watch movies, and talk to their friends all at the same time.
Yeah, look, it is fighting the last war, but it's fighting the last war that could do untold damage to, you know, new innovative businesses, to creators, you know, and to the Internet itself, and that's quite unfortunate. The fact of the matter is that once iTunes built a legitimate marketplace for songs, people bought. Did it stop piracy? No. And you'll never, look, there was piracy long before the Internet was invented. And anyone with an honest bone in their body in the content industry will admit it's impossible to stop. You know, the idea is to limit it. And we believe the best way that you limit it is through making a legitimate marketplace. Now, you know, these foreign websites, to the extent that they want to go after what they have admitted is just a handful. You know, the COO of Paramount Pictures testified about 8 months ago that the number of these rogue websites internationally numbered 20. So we're gonna basically restructure the Internet for 20 websites. There are much more targeted ways to go about this, and we have advocated a way to do this by just cutting off their money, cutting off access to credit card companies and other financial services that provide the money. It's worked in online gambling. There's no reason why it wouldn't work there. But we don't need a 78-page document, which this bill is, that would essentially regulate the Internet.
So what is the leeway or the possibility of abuse here, given that the specter of censorship has been raised by the very, very powerful companies, the Silicon Valley companies, if you will, Google, Facebook, AOL, Twitter, eBay, etc., arrayed against this? Is this a Trojan horse for censorship, as they suggest?
Well, it's a Trojan horse for censorship in several ways. Number one, the provisions of this bill can be used not only by the government, but also by private parties, so private copyright holders, to shut down speech that they don't like and to shut down enterprises that they don't like. It could be very, very easily abused. The standards under this bill that would be considered a violation are very, very low. So the companies and the government themselves can be use these as tools of censorship. But there's another way that this promotes censorship. This puts a face on America that the rest of the world will see, and it says the United States is willing to block websites essentially willy-nilly at the drop of a hat. So we lose our moral authority as a country to go around to Middle Eastern countries and to China and to Russia and say, don't block Twitter, don't block YouTube, because we're providing the means to do exactly that in this country and in other countries. So, you know, look, Secretary of State Clinton, in my mind, has perhaps been the biggest hero of global Internet freedom in this administration. But her, you know, her words have a lot less meaning and a lot less power when we are trying to do here what she's trying to stop overseas. And I think that really, really tests our leadership, as it pertains to being a place where we talk about freedom of speech and free flow of information. It becomes very, very hypocritical for us to try to stop that free flow of information here while promoting it overseas.
Well, it seems, though, that whenever these technological advances take place, there's always this kind of reaction. I mean, Skype, for example, wasn't it when it first started upsetting a lot of the kind of 19th century telecoms, you know? I mean, I think Skype itself in Dutch means something like, you know, stealing. I'm not sure the exact word is. But again, you get the feeling that you're talking about a 21st century market and a kind of 20th century gatekeepers.
Yeah, look, disruptive technologies always upset, you know, incumbent businesses. I mean, this is a story as old as time. And they're going to fight back and do whatever they can to maintain their market advantage. I mean, you know, the difference is that in the last 50 years, these huge companies actually use the arms of government in order to maintain that market advantage. You know, and that's what you're seeing here. You're seeing, it was very interesting to me that the MPA witness said this is not a bailout for Hollywood, because it certainly is. It is the government helping the motion picture studios and the recording industry maintain their market advantage, maintain their control over their business model, and that's all it is. So, you know, that's why they have hundreds of lobbyists in every single congressional office pushing for this. That's why they have the Chamber of Commerce pushing for this. In fact, you know, there's been several tech companies have already quit the Chamber of Commerce, several more are talking about quitting the Chamber of Commerce. And that's how disruptive technologies are treated now by attempts to regulate them out of existence.
Well, it does seem that you mentioned Google being unpopular on Capitol Hill, and we know the power of the MPPAA has been fairly profound, I think, in Washington, with Jack Valenti being a kind of fixture there for decades. And then they hired the former Secretary of Agriculture, didn't they, Glickman?
Yeah, Dan Glickman, and now it's a former senator. Chris Dodd is the head of it. Yeah, they have a tendency to hire these sort of high-profile types. But I'm not sure, you know, Valenti was, you know, sui generis, as we say. You know, he was one of a kind. I'm not sure it's Chris Dodd is the reason that they're getting as far as they're getting in this process. It's money in the process. It's the ability to, you know, bring movie stars to their offices or have screenings on 16th and I Street in the MPAA offices. I mean, there's just a great deal of influence and power, and they play a game that Silicon Valley has never played and frankly never will play. They're never going to have, you know, a lobbyist for every single office. It is really striking to me, this hearing, you know, Google was really portrayed as the bad guy, and I've seen polls, Google's approval rating throughout the country is like 85%. People consider it just like, you know, the superstar of American companies and employs over 30,000 people. It is the kind of job creator that Republicans love to embrace, right? Yet here it is in Washington, you know, being blamed for the downfall of the economy and, you know, and the downfall of civilization, for gosh sakes. It's rank hypocrisy, and I think it's also reflective of the fact that they don't have the same armies of lobbyists, and they don't give the same kind of money, put the same kind of money into the political process as Hollywood.
Well, I understand, though, that Google have started to spread their money around, but is it too little too late?
It's far less. And look, if they wanted to, you know, ramp up the way Hollywood, I mean, Hollywood still would have like a 100-year advantage, you know, in relationships.
I see.
You know, so yeah. It would be, I'm not sure it's too little too late. I don't think it's in their DNA because it's not a regulated company. Like the studios, because they're all broadcasters, are regulated companies. So, you know, they're used to being in Washington and having something going on in the regulatory process all the time. So they play the game. Hollywood wasn't always like this. You know, about 20 years ago or so, I worked with Hollywood before they became broadcasters and before they were regulated companies. I worked with them on a number of issues at the Federal Communications Commission, and they lost because they didn't have that, you know, kind of power. But, you know, as restrictions on campaign finance have been lifted, as corporations have been considered, you know, more and more considered human beings with, you know, the unlimited right to spend money, they have, you know, they've played the game in, you know, in the biggest way.
Well, just in closing, Gigi Sohn, you mentioned how just by one vote in the Supreme Court, the studios failed to shut down the VCR, a new technology that ended up making gazillions for them in a secondary market that they were blind to. And we know that just recently in the Senate, the net neutrality survived by a very, very narrow margin. How does this relate to the net neutrality battle, and give us an update on where we stand with that?
Sure. So we just had a great victory when the Senate voted down a resolution that would have not only repealed the FCC's recent network neutrality rules, but also would have prevented them from ever passing network neutrality rules. So that was really a great victory for the public interest there. What's interesting, and again, unfortunate about the SOPA bill, is that it has a provision that would give the Comcasts and the Verizons of the world an excuse to violate net neutrality. What do I mean? It has a provision that says if an Internet service provider like Comcast, Verizon, AT&T, Time Warner Cable reasonably believes that a website is engaging in copyright infringement or copyright piracy, then it could block that website and suffer no consequences. So if I as a Verizon customer, wanted to file a complaint at the FCC, that complaint would fail because it would be immune. So this bill would really undercut net neutrality and would give the Internet service providers a pretty airtight excuse for violating net neutrality willy-nilly.
So those that are concerned about the loss of net neutrality should be getting up off their backsides.
Absolutely. Look, on our website, we've got an action alert to contact a member of Congress against SOPA. There's something called AmericanCensorship.org. There are a lot of vehicles through which you can contact your member of Congress, and it's easy. We provide the form for you. You just have to create your own letter. But, you know, the thing that I found most galling about today's hearing was, well, there were two things. Number one was the lack of representation and even recognition by some that there was any other voices involved here other than big companies, and that was really outrageous. And those that actually did recognize that they were, you know, human rights activists and public interest activists and others weighing in against this, they basically almost disregarded, said our fears were overblown, and they disregarded what our fears and concerns are. We are your constituents, folks. We vote you in and out of office. So listen to our voices, or, you know, you could possibly suffer the consequences. So those are the two things I really feel, you know, were really upsetting about this hearing. So people need to weigh in with their members of Congress and say, hey, I'm your constituent and I care about this. And there are a lot of different, you know, ways to do that. But feel free to go to our website, www.publicknowledge.org. It's right on our homepage. Big picture. It says SOPA seriously screws the internet. And just click on there and you will be directed to a way that you can let your member of Congress know you don't like this bill.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us, Gigi Sohn.
My pleasure.
Again, I've been speaking with Gigi Sohn, who's the co-founder and president of Public Knowledge, a Washington, D.C.-based public interest group working to defend citizens' rights in the emerging digital culture. She was awarded the Internet Pioneer Award by the Electronic Frontier Foundation, and we were talking here today about SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act that the Congress is now hearing. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking with the mayor of Madison, Wisconsin, about the recall of Governor Scott Walker.